Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. This is our last recording for the third chapter of Megillah. We're going to finish the third parak today. We find ourselves on Daf Chaf Hei Amud Bet. That's 25b, and we are 2, 4, 5. We are on the sixth line down in the wide lines. This series of recordings is a joint project of the OU Department of Synagogue Services, OU Torah, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. What we've been discussing are certain verses of the Torah that when in the old times, when they would read the Torah in the synagogue, they would read verse by verse. They would read one verse in Hebrew and then translate it into Aramaic. And there were certain sections of the Torah, for various reasons, that they elected not to translate. They skipped the translation. And that's the section that we're going to deal with right now. It says in our Mishnah, or it actually says in the Braita that we mentioned at the beginning of the Gemara on the previous Amud, Ve'elu nikrin v'lo mitargimin. These are the sections of the Torah that are read in the Hebrew, but we don't translate them. And in parentheses it says, Ra'avdan siman. They had a mnemonic, a memory device, of remembering what all the cases were, and the cases were Ra'avdan. So that stands for the five cases that they're going to mention. The first is Reuven, that's the Reish. The Ayin stands for Egel. The Bet stands for Birkat Kohanim. The Dalet stands for David. And the Nun seems to be like there's only four cases. I thought maybe it's the Nun of Amnon, David ve'Amnon. Maybe that's the Nun. Otherwise, it really only seems like there's four cases. Okay, so the first one is Ma'aseh Reuven. As we mentioned in a previous recording, there is a verse in Bereishit that says, Vayelech Reuven went, Vayishkav et Bilhah, and he slept with Bilhah, who was the Pilegesh Aviv, the concubine of his father, Vayishma Yisrael, and Israel, that's Yaakov, heard. So that particular verse, what we say is, Nikra, it's read in the Hebrew, v'lo mitargim, we don't translate it. Uma'aseh, there was a certain story, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, shehalach leKabul, he went to a town called Kabul, and I don't know if that's the same Kabul as in Afghanistan, but possibly. V'haya kore chazan hakneset, and they had a chazan, in this case meaning a Torah reader, of the shul, who read the pasuk, Vayhi Bishkon Yisrael, and it was when Israel, this is the beginning of the verse, when Israel, that is Yaakov, settled in that land, right? And goes on to talk about Reuven. And as soon as he finished reading the verse in the Hebrew, Amar lo miturgaman, he said to the translator, we take out this next word, which is hafsek, which means stop, but we take it out. Al titargim, don't translate that verse. Ela acharon, only translate the end of the verse. So what happens is, this is a very unusual verse. After it says, and Reuven slept with his concubine, and Israel heard, and then there's a break, there's a petucha, meaning there's a blank space, and then the verse continues, Vayuvene Yaakov Shnei Masar, and the children of Jacob were 12. So there's kind of a break there in the middle of the verse, which is unusual. So what he had said, what this rabbi said, is only translate the last part, which is, and the children of Jacob were 12. And he was able to do that because even though it's one verse, it's the middle of a verse, because there's this unusual break there, he was able to only translate the last part of the verse. I lost my place. Vishibchu should be. Vishibchuhu chachamim. It's 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9 lines down in the wide lines. Vishibchuhu chachamim. And the sages praised him for doing this. That he didn't translate the part about Reuven, and even that he was clever enough, so to speak, to allow for the leniency of translating only the back half of the verse when there was a break in the middle of the verse. Ma'aseh Egel Hasheni, as we mentioned above, the first part of the Egel story, the story in which the Jewish people are worshiping the golden calf, is read and translated. But the second part of the story, Nikra v'lo mitargim, is read in the Hebrew, but it's not translated into Aramaic. So the Gemara asks, Eze ma'aseh egel hasheni, what exactly is the story of the second egel? And there's some confusion about this in the Rashi on the first daf too, but we're not going to go into it. So if you look in Shemot Perek Lamed Bet, you'll see that at the end of the story, after the Egel story happens, hold on, let me just find it here. after the Aegel story happens, Moshe goes to Aaron. This is after they've already ground up the Aegel and everything. Moshe goes to Aaron. Vayomer Moshe el Aharon, ma asalacha amazeh. What did the people do to you that they brought upon you this great sin? This is Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So it's Perek Lamed Bet, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Starting from there, this is what the Gemara is going to say. Mean Vayomer Moshe, from the verse Pasuk Chaf Aleph, that says Vayomer Moshe el Aharon, until Vayar Moshe, which is a couple verses later, all the way to the end of Chaf Dalet, where it says Vayar Moshe et ha'am ki faruah, when Moshe saw that the people were disorganized, and then he calls the Bnei Levi, and they have a whole war in the camp. But those three psukim, Chaf Aleph, Chaf Bet, and Chaf Gimel, and Chaf Dalet, those four psukim, are what we call Egel Hasheni. So from Vayomer Moshe until Vayar Moshe, that's Egel Hasheni. And those four verses are read in the Hebrew, but they are not translated. Tanya, we learn in a Braita, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, La'olam, always, Yehe Adam Zahir Bitshuvotav, a person should be scrupulous and careful, that's what Zahir means, in his answers, Bitshuvotav, Shemitoch Tshuva, because that out of the answer, Sheheshivo Aharon Moshe, that Aharon gave to Moshe, Pakru Hama'arim, the people who cause problems, that is, you know, the trolls, the ancient version of internet trolls, the people that want to cause problems, they were mifaker. They said negative things about Hashem. Shenemar, as it says, Aaron said, "Va'ashlicheu ba'esh, I threw the gold into the fire. Va'yetze ha'egel hazeh, and this golden calf came out." And the way Aaron said it, he made it sound like he did a magical incantation, and the people would have thought, listening to that, "Oh, well, there's real power to this magic. Aaron threw the gold into the fire, and an egel came out. That must be really powerful magic." And that led them astray to say that there really is power in the magic, or that we should, or that Aaron really did black magic, and that it might be okay to do black magic, all of these possible wrong outcomes. So what he's saying is that Aaron should have been more careful in his answer not to allow this sort of thing to happen. And we have such a advice in Pirkei Avot, Chachamim, hizaharu b'divreichem. Wise men should be very careful in how they use their words. And we see this more than now, even today, that the slightest off-message word or the slightest thing that you could imply from what a wise person says can be taken out of context to mean the wrong thing. So from Maaseh Egel, one of the reasons, the main reason that we don't translate it is because it might lead someone to the wrong conclusion. Okay, the next case at the two dots, Birkat Kohanim, the blessing of the Kohanim, Nikrin v'lo Matargamin, is read in the Hebrew but not translated into the Aramaic. My taima, what is the reason? Mishum dichtiv yisa, because of the word yisa. That's all the Gemara says. So Rashi gives an explanation of what it means, that we might, that people might say that Hashem is showing special favor to the Jewish people that they are not worthy of. And that he shows them extra favor that they haven't deserved over the other nations of the world, something like that, which is a strange conclusion, or it's a strange verse to focus on to not translate. But that's all the Gemara says. So I don't have a better explanation, but I'm sure that there is one out there. I did want to mention, and I forgot to mention this earlier, that Tosfot has an opinion about Aharon as well, that a different interpretation, that rather than saying that Aharon's words would seem to lead people to think that there was truth in black magic, that this in particular, we don't translate it because it's an example of one person, that is Aaron, being publicly humiliated in front of everyone. And so for that reason, we are more stringent about it as opposed to some of the other cases. Okay. So we move on. Maaseh David v'Amnon. What about the story of David and Amnon? Now, the version in our Gemara says, Lo nikrin v'lo matargamin. It's not read and it's not translated. And that's the same version we have in the Mishnah. However, both the Gra and the Hagos Merav Runchberg take out the lo. In other words, according to this version, both the story of David and Amnon is read, but it's not translated. Now, the truth is here, it's not as big a deal because it's not connected to Birkat Kohanim. So in the Mishnah where it was connected to Birkat Kohanim, it makes it sound like Birkat Kohanim was not read even in the Hebrew, which is clearly not the case. Here in our Braita, we learn that Birkat Kohanim is read, it's just not translated, or at least Yisa, that pasuk, is not translated. Here we could at least say by Masi David and Amnon that we don't use this section as a Haftorah, and therefore we don't have to worry about reading and translating it. The Ha'amart, and have you not said Ma'aseh Amnon v'Tamar Nikra u'Metargem? Did you not say elsewhere that the story of Amnon and Tamar should be read and translated? Lo kasha, it's not a kasha. Hadichtiv, when it is written Amnon ben David, when it associates Amnon with his father, the son of David, then we don't translate it because it's shameful for David. Hadichtiv Amnon stama, and when it writes Amnon stam, then we can read it and translate it because it doesn't directly connect him to David. In any case, I don't believe that we use that section as a Haftorah in today's practice, so it is not of practical concern for us. Tanu Rabbanan, we learn, our rabbis taught, Kol HaMikraot, any section of the Torah, Haktuvim, or Kol HaMikraot, all the scriptural sections, Haktuvim BaTorah, that are written in the Torah, Lignai, for shame. Now, I think for shame here means, it seems from the example, seems to mean that are explicitly vulgar. Korinotan lishvach. We read them in a more elegant way. That seems to be the proper way to translate it, as we'll see. And we're going to try to avoid being too vulgar in our explanations as well, which is not an easy thing to avoid in this section. Kigom, as it says, the first example is in the Klalot, in Kitavo, at the end of Devarim, when it's describing all the terrible things that will happen to the Jewish people. One of the words that it uses is that they'll come to our daughters and that they will yishgalena, they will ravish them, rape them. So what we do is, instead of reading that word, we read it as yishgavena, they will lie with them, which is a sort of more euphemistic, cleaner, less explicit word. And the same thing when it talks about Bauflim, that word, which is also in the Klalot, which is has a specific meaning related to the rectum. We change it to Batchorim, which more means something more like on their bottoms. It's less explicit and less vulgar. Another example is found in Nach, and this particular example using the word Charyonim is found, I'm just trying to find it here. This is found in Melachim Bet, chapter 6, verse 25. It's talking about a famine in the Shomron. And it's talking about how the prices went up everywhere, so that even if you wanted to buy a bag of bird dung, it cost a lot of money. So the word for bird dung is cheryonim, but it's a vulgar word. So instead of using the curse word, so to speak, the vulgar word, we instead read the word divyonim, which is a more euphemistic word. It's kind of like saying crap instead of saying a different four-letter word. The next example is the curse of Rav Shakeh. This is found also in Melachim Bet, chapter 18, verse 27. There you have the general Rav Shakeh is threatening the people of Yerushalayim, and he's saying, we're going to come in there and destroy you. This is during Chizkiyahu's reign. And he's cursing them, and he says to them that the people, they're going to starve them out, so that the people that are guarding the walls, le'echol et choreihem v'lishtod et meimei shineihem, which means they're going to have to eat their own feces and drink their own urine. So instead of using those words, choreihem, which is a very explicit word, we say le'echol et tso'atam. And even though the word tso'ah also means fecal matter, it has the word of that which comes out of you. It's more euphemistic, it's less explicit than chorehem. And when you say v'lishtoret meimei raglehem, the water of the feet, it's a cleaner, less vulgar language. Another example, the next example, is limchoraot, which comes from also Malachim Bet, chapter 10, which we change to lemotzaot. Again, it's the language of that which exits the body, but it's a cleaner language. So all of those examples are things that are vulgar, and instead of reading the vulgar word, we read something less vulgar. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha Omer. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha, however, disagrees with the last example, and he says Limchora Ot Kishman. We do read Mechora Ot in that last example, and the reason is Mipnei Hu Gnai LaAvodat Kochavim, because it is to the shame of the idolaters and not to the shame of the Jewish people. In that case, they're talking about tearing down all of the idolatrous shrines and altars. So he says, oh, when we're talking about tearing down the idolatrous shrines and altars, we don't care so much. And that leads us to our next discussion, which is a little bit of a challenging discussion. Amar Rav Nachman, kol leitzanuta asira. In general, mocking and being sarcastic and mean is forbidden, according to Jewish law. Bar, except for mileitzanuta davodat kochavim, unless you're mocking idolaters. That, you're allowed to be as sarcastic and mean as you want to be. Disharya, it's permitted. It doesn't say it's great or that a real Talmud Chacham should do such a thing, but it's allowed. Dichtiv, and he gives an example based on this verse, which is found in Yeshayahu chapter 46, the beginning. It says, Kara Baal, Baal, who is their god, will bow over, Kores Nevo, and he will stoop down. Hayu Atzabeam Lachaya, their altars will be for the wild animals, Vela Behema, and the domesticated animals. Nesuotechem Amusot Masalaifa, and their altars will be loaded up to be eaten by the wild birds. So the way, as Rashi explains, that they seem to explain this is in a mocking sort of way, rather than the sort of translation that I just gave. What they interpreted as that your gods will be bent over because they are incontinent. They're unable to hold their own bowels. So they're bending over, and when it says they can't even hold their own load, it is interpreted in a vulgar sort of way. But it's permitted to mock the idols of the nations and say that they are unable to hold their own bowels because you're mocking the idolaters, and that's permitted. Another example, Rabbi Yana Amar Mehacha. Rabbi Yana gives another a final example, which comes from from Hosea. Le'eglot beit aven yaguru shechan shomran ki achal alav amo uchmarav alav yagilu lo kvodo ki gala mimenu. So the Gemara quotes the whole verse, but when it says al kvodo, on his honor, it says al tikri kvodo, don't read it as his honor, el kvedo, but his load. So similarly, saying that he is unable that he's incontinent and unable to hold his bowels, and this is also permitted since we are mocking the idolaters. Amar Rav Huna bar Manoach mishmei derav acha. Rav Huna, the son of Manoach, said in the name of Rav Acha, Berei de Rav Ika, the son of Rav Ika, and this is on a similar topic. Shorei Leila by Yisrael, it is permitted for a Jewish person, Lememar Leila Ovid Kochavim, to say to an idolater, Shakle Lavodas Kochavim, take your idolatry, Va'anche B'Shintav, and stick it in your Shintav. If that sounds like something that you might say and you can imagine what a shintav is, you're probably right. Some of the commentators say that it was said not that in a way that the Jew could have at least an excuse and say, oh, I didn't mean what you think I said, that the non-Jew might think he meant bisako vitarmilo, but it probably means something else, which is exactly what you think it means. Amar Ravashi. Ravashi said, Haiman disane shomane, a person who has done hateful and terrible, vulgar things. Sharele lebazuye, you're permitted to humiliate him, begimel vishin, with a gimel and a shin. So the question is what a gimel and a shin is. There are a couple different answers given in the commentators, but apparently there was a certain well-known prostitute whose name was Saraya, and she was a bar girta, which means a prostitute, is what Rashi says. So you can say, you're the son of this notorious prostitute, which is kind of a big insult. And you're allowed to say that to someone who has done things that are really horrible. Haiman de Shapir Shomane, on the other hand, someone who has done wonderful things, Shari l'shabuche, it's permitted, not required, but permitted l'shabuche, to praise them. Uman de Shabche, and the one who praises someone who does these wonderful things, yanuchu lo brachot al rosho, may blessings come upon their head. In other words, we believe more in positive reinforcement. You should praise the people who do wonderful things rather than cursing the people who do horrible things. But there is left open here in this Gemara the possibility that for idolaters who were truly the enemies of the Jewish people and for people that have done really horrible things, that we have a sort of a loosening of the rules about generally being kind and polite, which is usually required by Jewish law, but there's a certain loosening and you're allowed to use some inappropriate language in order to express our dissatisfaction with them. Exactly where you draw the line and who's allowed to use this kind of language and who ought to use this kind of language, I can't say for sure, but that is what the Gemara says, that there are times when being polite is not 100% required. Hadron Allah HaKoryas HaMegillah Omed, we will return to you the third chapter of Megillah, HaKoryas HaMegillah, and I look forward to beginning the fourth parak with you in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.